All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order. The betting calendar is absolutely loaded right now. Baseball in full swing. NBA, NHL playoffs already underway. If you want to get really spicy, you can even bet the WNBA. Look, I'm not judging. Action's action. The question is, where are you betting? Because that matters just as much as what you're betting. That's why I go to mybookie.ag. And why you should too. New to MyBookie? Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. If your first bet loses, you get a full refund up to $500 back in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for showing up. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.
This is the ZABE cast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Here we go. And we have just gone final from Madison Square Garden. The Spurs are not dead yet. 115 to 111. 2-1 New York in the best of seven. Game four. Coming up on Wednesday, and game five, now necessary, we'll be back in San Antonio on Saturday. Welcome aboard, everybody. It is the ZABE cast. It is a Tuesday, June 9, 2026. Thank you for downloading. It's almost midnight. It was a three-hour game. It tipped mostly on time. Might have nudged it back a bit because of the security snafus with the president attending the game in person. But man, oh man, that's a lot of money that was spent in the lead up for these tickets to this game to then go home disappointed. I don't think anybody that splurged and bought those high price tickets are really regretting it per se. They're just bummed their team didn't win. If you have $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 to spend on a bouncy ball game, then your life is not going to change just because the team loses when you spend that much money. They'll spend it again on Wednesday night, but they're not going to see a championship banner raised in the building tomorrow night, or I should say Wednesday night. They'll have to wait. They'll have to wait a little bit. They might have to do it on the road, and don't let these Spurs get going. Where do we begin tonight? Let me start with this. I actually watched the entire game. And by watched, I mean I did not sit at my desk here, at my studio desk with the lights and the cameras and everything else, and then look up periodically as I'm researching and pecking around at things on the internet. That is how I watched a good amount of games at night, especially football games. It's not ideal. It's bad for my attention span. It shouldn't be hard for a big game to sit on your ass in front of the TV and watch. And maybe during timeouts, pick up your phone to kind of fill the dead time, during timeouts when you're not taking a piss or going to get a drink. I know that the internet and our phones are chopping our attention spans into tiny little pieces. This is my way, my effort of trying to at least get back in the habit of just sitting and watching whole games. Now, would I watch a whole NBA game, stem to stern, start to finish, in November? December, January, February. Hell fucking no. It's too much. It's too much. But this felt like a really big game. This felt like the biggest NBA game in a lot of years, just because of the hype involved in it, the ticket price angle and everything else. So I'm like, you know what? I'm ready. I'm locked in. I'm going to go sit over in the chair in the office looking at the TV that's kind of behind my shoulder because I can't watch the big TV in my office from the desk. That was done on purpose. I'm trying to condition myself to sit and watch more things. So that's number one. I know. You're like, way to pat yourself on the back. You watched a game. Isn't that what you're supposed to do? Yes, it is. Although you'd be surprised and you'd have no idea just how many in my business do not ever watch whole games. That said, I watched the whole game. I have no idea how many of you guys listening that are loyal Zabecast listeners, I have no idea how many of you A, like, B, care, C, watch NBA bouncy ball games in June if it's not your team. Now, I know the crowd that likes to say, I'm out. I haven't watched a game since. Insert old school player, insert certain period in your life when the NBA meant more, and then go on a complete tirade about all the things you don't like. The grumpy old man shaking his fist from his recliner or his lawn chair rant about the NBA. And I'm not saying some of the criticisms or many of them are not valid. They are, but my God, do you like basketball? Basketball's a great game. It's the world's game now, as we're seeing with more and more European players flooding into the NBA, and there's more to come. If you like basketball, shit, you should still watch the NBA. You shouldn't just take your ball and go home. You shouldn't just say, I haven't watched since whenever. It's junk. It's this. I hate it because of that. I think secretly a lot of you people that say you're out, you're not totally out. You're still watching chunks of it. You're still tuning in for the big games. But I have no idea with my audience how many really appreciate the fact that I stayed up late to do this podcast fresh, because I just didn't feel like it'd be right to put something to bed at 5 p.m. and then say, okay, yay me, I'm just going to relax now and watch the game and go to bed. Didn't feel right. I felt like I needed to deliver some stuff about the game on Tuesday morning because, hell, I don't have a job right now. And so what else am I going to do, right? I had imagined that those of you who really do like the NBA still and want it to be great and think it is great in some ways, you're not as vocal as the I'm out, Jerry crowd. So for that, I'm doing this for you. 115-111, Knicks ice cold in the fourth quarter from outside. Wemby was good early, he was great late, and he was too much, and Castle is an absolute defensive menace. Spurs were the better team, start to finish, soup to nuts, top to bottom, and they deserved to win. And if it weren't for the outcome, the narrow outcome of game two, they'd be up 2-1, and the pundits would say they are in control. Now, the pundit named Charles Barclay declared this series a wrap. The whole series a wrap because at halftime, the Knicks were up 7. Well, they came out of the half absolutely disorganized and instantly threw away that 7-point lead. A lot of money spent by a lot of people to see this game, and they go home disappointed. I spent $0. I watched on TV, and even though it was a big game, it was bad basketball. It was so rough early on. They were clearly, the referees, dedicated to not calling fouls early on. Let them play. Okay, well, here's the problem. Today's NBA player is so good at gamifying contact and foul calls, and they're all in on it now that really the game has become nothing but contact farming and wrestling. Just constant double grabbing of arms. And it's so hard to officiate when there's that much contact. And I don't think anybody fouled out of the game tonight. Let me quickly check the box score. I'm pretty sure the only guy who was in foul trouble was Brunson, who sat for a good stretch of the third and fourth quarter. And that was it. He got four fouls. So if you're going to have a league in which nobody fouls out, and guys know that they can get away with contact both on defense, and that if they're artful enough on offense in seeking out contact, you'll get calls, then what do you think is going to happen? How do you think the game is going to devolve? It's going to devolve into what it is now. Contact farming, exaggeration, flopping, wrestling, slap fighting, and a bunch of ill-advised threes whenever the mood strikes. God, some of the awful threes that I was counting in the fourth quarter. At one point, they say, you know, the Knicks are 0-10 here in the fourth quarter so far from three. And I'm like, no shit. Have you seen the looks that they're taking? Karl Anthony Towns, barely having caught the ball, 1 second later, yeets it up with 20 seconds on the shot clock. Really? That was the best look you can get, huh, for the possession? Landry Shamet throwing them up from all over the place. It was just, ugh. It's tough. A lot of solo ball possessions by Brunson. It just wasn't good basketball all around, but the Spurs were the better team. Now, on the Brunson front, I said a lot of nice things about him yesterday on the podcast. Let me add this as a additional thought. And that is, he is a master agitator and he is a contact ninja. Foul number one, or that was not called a foul, Wemby pushes Brunson almost to the ground angrily in the back of the head. Referees let it play on. Crowd goes nuts. They show the replay. The announcers are aghast, saying, oh my God, how is that not a foul? And it should have been a foul. I said so myself on Twitter. How do they miss that? Well, it's not so much that they missed it. I think that the referees were watching the play and they saw that Brunson, again, being the contact ninja that he is, the master agitator, went in and just kind of purposely got himself all tangled up with Wemby in a way that was sneaky and didn't look like he was holding him. And Wemby had had enough of it. He finally said, look here, little man, get up off of me. Shaq had a very passionate defense of his fellow big man, saying, no, man, don't criticize Wemby for that. That's the right thing to do. You tell them little dudes, get up off you. That's one example. Another example came later on in the game when Brunson's driving to the basket and he crashes right into De'Aaron Fox, throws up the ball over his head, and it goes in and he gets the and one. Now, at first, I'm like, well, yeah, that was clearly a foul. Fox moved right into him, didn't get position, and yeah, good call. Then they showed the replay. In the replay, you have Brunson turning the corner, seeing the lane open wide in front of him. The seas parted. And what did Brunson do? Did he go right down the lane and try to make a layup? No. He saw that De'Aaron Fox had drifted in a bit of a sort of a submissive way to permit the drive. He moved out of the way, did Fox, knowing that Brunson had a head of steam and he wanted to at least get on his hip instead of get in front of him to take a foul on his own. And so what Brunson does is he recognizes, oh, there's an open lane to the basket, but I like contact. I get calls on contact, especially here at home. I'm going to veer right, and I'll go right into De'Aaron Fox, and then I'll throw the ball up. If it goes, it goes. If not, I'll get two free throws. I had to rewind it a couple times and go, holy shit, look at what he did there. That was so subtle. that was so sneaky and that was so bullshit. I don't know how you get this stuff out of the game. I just don't. Also, another case with Brunson. So Brunson took a big elbow right to the chest from Castle. Castle had decided, okay, I'm sick of your shit, and he decides to kind of cut on offense towards the basket. Brunson, seeing that he's about to make a dive into the paint, decides to get in his way, which he's allowed to do to a certain extent. Now, he does not have the basketball, so you really can't impede a guy. You can't just interfere with a guy's free movement. You can run with him. You can try to guard him, but you can't just stand there and be like, all right, you want to run down here? Well, guess what? I'm going to make you bowl me over, and then I'm going to act like I'm dead. Tweet! Foul. So Brunson gets knocked over. Yes, Castle gave him extra elbow. No, it was not deemed a flagrant foul. They did review it. More on replay in a second. And they determined it was not a flagrant foul. The crowd went nuts. If you watch the play, I'm convinced that basically Brunson decided, okay, I can see this coming. He wants to go hard into the paint. I'm just going to make sure I'm in the way. Then I'm going to flop backwards, and there's a good chance I'm going to get a call. And he did. And then he made sure to stay down a little while longer. Maybe he was hurt, maybe not. Looked like a pretty hard hit. But staying down gamifies the way that they can look at, do we want to challenge this and say, is it a flagrant? Or do we want the referees to at least go, that might be a flagrant. Give it a second. Later on in the game, there was a complete screw up on when the referees gave the ball to the Spurs to inbound after the Knicks seemingly were wanting to challenge or at least get a substitution. Or I think it was the other way around. The Spurs wanted to get a substitute, so it bought them more time to look at the, quote, iPad so they could maybe challenge. Oh, there was also back-to-back challenges in the game at one point. Always thrilling when each team decided to call one. Challenge, go to break, it gets overturned, okay, ball's back in play, we got bouncy ball, up, there's a foul, and there's going to be another challenge. But the whole way that everything has been gamified, not only has contact been weaponized and gamified, but the way that teams manipulate their challenges and decide on when to use them. They made sure to show on screen the Knicks, their de facto replay coach, whose title involves the term special situations. He's the coach of special situations. Jordan Brink is his name. And he made sure to challenge when Mitchell Robinson had been pushed into Wemby on a three-point attempt that he made. And it was like, challenge that. He didn't mean to jump into him. He was pushed. It was a good challenge. Then we go to break. Then we come back. And then you've got Karl-Anthony Towns pretty much grabbing every piece of Wemby's long, wavy, inflatable, used car dealership arms. And that's overturned on replay. So much contact all the time, every time. And the refs can't sort it out. And the league clearly has a mandate. We do not want guys fouling out of games, period, which they don't anymore. So it's going to result in some pretty bad basketball much of the time. Wemby was great, though. I mean, this is the Wemby they need. 32, 8, and 6, several alley-oops in the game, got to the free throw line 9 times, hit 2 threes, really good. Castle is a son of a bitch. Not just outstanding defensively, but 23, 5, and 5 for him, and he just seems to have a killer demeanor where he's never getting too worked up about much. De'Aaron Fox hit a big shot late for them. He had 12. Champagne had 12. Harper had 13 off the bench plus 9 boards. He is bigger than you think, explosive as hell, and smooth as can be. I am getting more and more Derek Harper love all the time. Or Dylan Harper, excuse me. thinking about his old man. Brunson, 32-5 with 5 assists in the loss. Too much solo ball from him. Ananobi was great, 28-5 for him. Plus, he hit 3 threes. Hart, steady game as always, 16-9-5. And then Karl Anthony Towns, not much to be seen. He's come crashing back to earth after 2 great games, 11 and 8 boards for him. And they threw a whole bunch of nobodies into the game because they needed a spark at some point. Jordan Clarkson was pretty good. Can I just say Jordan Clarkson looks like he should be a character on the old Cosby Bunch cartoon? Or on Fat Albert, not the Cosby Bunch. Fat Albert, it's such a wild look. The headband, the long stringy dreads, the very compelling eyes, the 00 jersey. He really helped them, though, when they came in, when they were playing like shit early on. So it's 2-1 now. We'll see the pucker factor for game 4, and we could still have ourselves a series. Now to some non-basketball-related thoughts about everything. Let me talk about courtside seats for a second. I love the fact that they are a thing, period. I love that we have a professional sport in America in which if you're rich enough and connected enough, you can sit literally shoulder to shoulder with other players and assistant coaches that are in the game itself. You are literally right there, so close to being in the game that if you stretched your feet out, you could trip a player and injure them, as happened on Curb Your Enthusiasm when Larry David borrowed his buddy Jeff Garland's tickets to the Lakers and put Shaq on IR. The fuck? What are you doing? I just got those seats. They took them away from me. They can't do that. They can, and they did. What are you stretching out for? Larry David, one of the celebrities, seen down there courtside. I don't know if he was exactly front row or not, or on the court or on the hardwood or not. I love that it exists. I want to go back and find out, when did they really invent courtside or on the wood seats? Would love to know. They have certainly in the NBA taken out a lot of scorers table real estate. Way back when I was just a young pup in my early 20s, just out of college, doing Bullets games as the clock operator, on, off, on, off. That's it. Not the 24-second clock. I got to do the clock. It's a sweet gig. I sat courtside, front row, watching NBA games, bad ones mostly because the Bullets sucked. But I did that for a season and a half. It was great. Anyway, back then there was a huge wide swath of us on the scorer's table as well as media. Oh, shit, they've pretty much eliminated all that. And I'm not even sure, other than the very narrow little replay table where the refs come in and look into the camera and explain what the hell they just saw on replay, I don't think there's any other real estate there. So when did they start inventing on the wood seats? And what's been the average price increase through the years? Now, tonight's game was a very special exception because you had the froth was so great for the Knicks. Everyone was like, I got to have these tickets. Also, the Knicks did auction off for charity 2 tickets on the wood courtside. All money's going to charity, and it went for over $1 million for 2 tickets. Now, that it was a private equity firm and like a law firm that donated the tickets. And as Kramer would say, it's a write-off, Jerry. What do you mean it's a write-off? Well, they're the ones, Jerry, writing it off. Did not see Jerry Seinfeld at the game. I love the celebrity sightings where they don't actually call it out in sort of montage style, like they did early on. They go, oh, and there's Ben Stiller, longtime Knicks super fan, and there's Timothy Chalamet. Oh, and there's Jay-Z. No. I like being able to go, hey, wait a minute. I think I saw Bob Kraft. Yes, indeed. There he is. Hey, I think that's DJ Khaled. Why, there you go. Yes, indeed. Let's see. What else? There was obviously the Tina Fey-Tracy Morgan combo. John McEnroe was there. Larry David was there. You know who I did not see? And you know who has not been on the broadcast conspicuously and on purpose by ESPN? Stephen A. Smith. That's a fascinating story that we should probably talk more about in a future podcast, where ESPN has said, okay, we're already paying you a lot of money and you're already on everything we do. It would be too much for you as a Knicks fan to be on the finals on set. And of course, now because they've licensed in the Inside the NBA set with Kenny and Charles and Shaq, and now the unfortunate addition of that zilch from Golden State, Draymond Green, you know, it's a bit of a crowded set. Also, are they making the table smaller now for these on-site sets for the announcers? Because they did not all fit around the tiny set they were sitting at. And the NHL on-site set at the finals with Steve Levy and PK Subban and Biz Nasty, that's even smaller. That's even less impressive. Must be budget cuts. Who knows? But anyway, Stephen A. Smith is not there. Interesting. They must have gotten some polling that said, some research that said, enough already, for God's sakes. Far as the broadcast team goes, I'm a huge Mike Breen fan. He's still great. I think Legler is, he's fine, I guess. It'll be fascinating years from now to go back and say, why was it again that Tim Legler, of all people, who had the most niche of niche NBA careers as a dedicated white guy three-point gunner for the Bullets, how did he rise to the level of being on the NBA Finals as a broadcaster? And again, I'm not saying he's bad. He's fine. But it feels to me like Kevin Kisner getting the lead analyst chair on golf for NBC. Why? How? Kisner himself, a tour journeyman. You're telling me there's no other greats? Faldo, Venturi, Lanny Watkins, these are all guys that won majors that got to that position. You'd think they'd find somebody better, or at least more high profile, who's also good, by the way, to be that number one analyst. I'm still yearning for the Breen, Jackson, and Van Gundy trio, which was fantastic, but probably cost a little bit too much for ESPN. And so they're like, we can go cheaper. As far as Jefferson goes, he's also fine. I like him a little bit more on air than Legler. Legler's apparently a great dude. Everyone who's met him says he's a great dude, and I'm sure he is. I'm just talking about overall, why? Why is he on the broadcast? Also, his points, I think, are a little bit too labored at times, and I don't need him to be giving me detailed breakdown of last play when we're in the first quarter and it's only 2 seconds into the offensive possession for the other team. It just let the game flow, man. But Richard Jefferson, nice guy. He's worked at it longer or a long time. He hadn't really been around as long quite as Legler, but he's been there. He does a good job. He doesn't make it about himself. Makes some good points. Okay, fine. Other than that, I wasn't blown away with any great new camera angles, any great new features so far they've got in the NBA Finals. But it's been a solid production by and large. The vibe was great, obviously, in the arena. And this is because everybody was in their seat right away, in part because, well, they had to get there so fucking early because of security. And secondly, because it's like we paid so much money for this ticket. I am not going to be milling around the concourse looking for a pizza stand. So that led to a really good environment, obviously. Now, let's talk Trump. Trump came to the game. In theory, In principle, as a larger point, presidents should go to sporting events periodically. How many? That's up for debate. Also, it was apparently the first time ever a sitting president had been to an NBA game. An NBA finals game. Obama would go to some games at Wizard games when he was president, but obviously a much different situation there. And of course, he sat, I think, courtside or somewhere close as the celebrity president that he obviously was. But Trump is different. Trump has had three absolute credible assassination attempts on his life, one of which came within inches of succeeding. And so him going to games is a bit of a thing, a bit of a luxury. It's a bit of a, I don't know, like, should we do this? So I'm torn. My top line thought is, Jesus, dude, just let the fans get to the game in peace. You don't need to be there. My secondary thought is, well, so does that mean anytime there's a president that perhaps is unpopular by the half of the country that didn't vote for him, that he's got to hide and he can't go places and be places for big events? That'd be bullshit. On principle, he should go whenever. Also, because the Secret Service has done such an absolutely ass job as of late, they fucking needed the practice. So the more I thought about it, I'm kind of like, there's some good reasons why he should definitely go. Also, don't forget, he was very much involved with the New York Knicks, very much a fan, very much Mr. Manhattan, very much Mr. New York prior to becoming president. The broadcast did show him briefly, which I thought was the proper thing to do, because otherwise they'd get ripped for saying, oh, you didn't want to mention he was there, huh? But it was not any kind of prolonged thing. It was just a quick bump back. He was there with Larry Dolan, the owner. So, yeah. On the one hand, presidents should go places and do things. On the other hand, it was an absolute mess getting in. He will not be there for game 4 or game 6, if necessary, at least not at this time. I don't think he will. Oh, yes, I didn't see Alec Baldwin there. Now, I don't know if he was ever a big Knicks fan, but I think Alec Baldwin is a little bit too toxic. Now for some really odd nitpicks or just observations. Observation number one. The variety of hairstyles in this finals is incredible. It's off the charts. Like, there are so many different looks going on. Like I mentioned earlier, Jordan Clarkson looks like he should be on Fat Albert or an extra in The Wire. Who is this guy? His name should be Skinny Pete. Man, what an interesting look. Can really play basketball, though. Then you've got Castle, whose hair is almost like the fountains at Bellagio of hair. I'm very jealous. Some guys' hairstyles, I don't quite get what's going on or how they get it the way they do or if they just don't try. Champagne is one of them. The king of all the what is going on with your hair guy is Mitchell Robinson. Mitchell Robinson is not necessarily going bald, but his hair is not thriving. Let me put it that way. His hair is, it's receding, but it's receding in a high, uneven, sloped manner where the fuzzy hair in the front is shorter than the fuzzier hair as you go backwards and kind of like an angle. And then there is the triangle head of Landry Shamet. I can't stop staring at it going, look at this guy's head. Look at his face. It looks a little bit like Screech from Saved by the Bell, but he can play basketball. And the hair is curly. I'm like, wow. Then you got the one true wonderbread white guy in Cornette who came in, got a few minutes for the Spurs. His nice, fluffy, white guy, feathered, blonde hair, dirty blonde hair, still dry after his 5 or 6 runs up and down the court for his 4 minutes of burn. Let me see how much Cornette got. He got 9 minutes of burn. barely enough to get any moisture underneath his fop on his head. But yeah, the hairstyles of just about everybody, except for Fox and Wemby. They're the two guys that just said, no, this is fine. What am I trying to prove here? What am I trying to grow here? What am I trying to do here? But yeah, that was the game. And are there any other notes? Looking. I got two Post-it notes. No, that's pretty much it. My thoughts on the game. Coming up, a World Cup preview with my boy Nick Lochner, who has retired from corporate America with one goal in mind: do nerdy shit that you enjoy, even if it makes no money. So he's writing a newsletter for soccer called The Clean Sheet EPL. I will get my World Cup primer up to speed with Nick next. You are listening to the late night version of the Zabecast. Let's talk casino for a second. MyBookie.ag has a full Las Vegas-style casino right on your phone. Blackjack, roulette, craps, slots, video poker, all of it. No flight, no parking, no guy next to you who hasn't showered since Thursday. And they have live dealer games. Real humans on camera dealing cards and spinning wheels in real time. You can watch the shuffle. It's not some random number generator. It's an actual person running an actual table, and you're sitting at it from your couch. New players get $25 in casino credit automatically with promo code ZABE just for making a deposit. Free money to try it on them. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. All right, Nicky, good to see you again, you dirty bastard. How you doing?
Doing great, ZABE. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, the World Cup is upon us. Shout out to my Pewaukee Mafia boys and to Patrick for kind of getting this going. Really excited to be here to talk some soccer.
Patrick was relentless on that. So I want the full scoop on how you are such a psycho soccer fan or football fan. Give me the backstory as elevator pitchy as you can.
All right.
Having elevator worked a long pitch. Time in the corporate world.
I was a corporate America guy at a consulting company for 34 years. I was traveling to Europe a lot, and I grew up a what I thought was a great sports fan. It was all football, basketball, and baseball in the Midwest in Wisconsin. And I get over to Europe and I'm talking to people and I don't know who Juventus is or what Juventus is. And they had just won the European Champions League Cup. And I was sitting in my client in Turin, Italy, and the owners of Juventus also happened to own Fiat Corporation. And I look like an idiot. And I said, never again will I not know about where I'm going. And I started to go to Europe and learn more about soccer, loved the promotion relegation. And then basically being, you know, not the U.S. culture of soccer is very different than the rest of the world. And I always just grew up kind of not liking it and even, you know, poo-pooing it and whatever. Sure. And, you know, all the flopping and all of this and all of that, and the clock never stops and it's a low scoring match and all that kind of stuff. And I just started to get hooked on it. I was kept going over there. I could talk with people on it. And I started this newsletter right before I retired. So about two years ago, I got out of corporate America. I kind of had enough. I had a chance, an off ramp to take, took it. Okay. And I'm like, I need to do something creative that I enjoy that's on the side on my time. And I just kind of had been talking to people about the soccer stuff. I'm like, I subscribed to a newsletter writer online. It's called Beehive. And I just started writing and, you know, I started to get a following. And it's been fun. So I enjoy it.
It's called The Clean Sheet. Which is
EPL,
which is a soccer reference. What is a clean sheet?
So a clean sheet is when a team plays an entire game without giving up a goal. So the goalkeeper achieves a clean sheet.
Got it.
That is taken by a lot of different other websites. I added EPL to the end because I emphasize the English Premier League.
Okay.
Since it's broadcast in the U.S. a lot.
Okay.
And then, and so if you look for it, it's Clean Sheet EPL Beehive, B-E-E-H-I-I-V. But if you search for it, it'll, it should pop up.
All right. Nick Lochner, L-O-C-H-N-E-R. All right. So on the American culture of soccer, let me give you my quick background in soccer. Yes, I played as a kid because all kids my age played some soccer at some point. I scored one goal in my career and it was called off due to offsides. I couldn't even understand like why. Like, what do you mean offsides? I was crushed. I probably cried. I lost quickly the enthusiasm for soccer. I understand American soccer has long been orange slices and participation trophies. It does not resonate and beat in the heart of American kids like it does over there. That said, I'm not anti-soccer. My college roommate, Aaron Heifetz, was a soccer player who then became the press secretary for the U.S. Women's National Team and can be seen in the highlights of Brandi Chastain's game-winning penalty kick where she ripped off her shirt to show her sports bra. My boy Heifetz, my roommate in college at UC Santa Barbara, was the first one running out there to celebrate with her. So I have a good amount of soccer contacts in my life. And when people ask me, Nick, so do you like the World Cup? And I go, oh, I love the World Cup. Well, what about other soccer? I'm like, nah, not really. But this event, I love it because it's the best of the best. If I'm only going to watch a little bit of soccer in my life, I want to watch the fucking best. Does that make sense?
That makes 100% sense. And add in all the pageantry, all the drama, all the, you know, there's a lot of political stuff.
Oh,
there's a lot of, you know, there it's got, and, you know, as a, whether you like soccer or not, if you like sports and the drama and the underdog, you're going to have 104 matches over the next month and a half. Roughly 72 of them will be over the next 2.5 weeks.
Oh, it's
because all
be
the group play.
For sure.
That's all the group play. So starting on Thursday, there's going to be anywhere from 2 to 6 matches a day for over 2 straight weeks. And then it'll turn. And so that's the group play. Then it'll turn into the knockout phases where the competition ratchets up.
The stories that come out of the World Cup are always fantastic, especially like I think a couple cups ago, there was some African nation team that was threatening to boycott because they weren't getting paid.
Yeah,
I was like, what, do you remember who was that? That story. Like the Brave Lions, I think was their nickname.
Well, I think it was Senegal.
Okay, it was Senegal. Yeah,
yeah.
Federation is not paying us, so we're not fucking taking the field. It's like it's the World Cup.
Well, it's funny you say that, Zabe, because yesterday I was listening to a radio show and France has yet to receive their paychecks from the government this year. And it's been a topic of conversation already. And they've been in the finals the last 2 years, winning in 18 and losing to Argentina in 22. So it's there's always something.
All right, so just for those that don't know, I did go to Grok, and I asked it the question, Nick. I said, explain to me how this year's Cup is different than the last one, and it gave me a pretty good synopsis where they've expanded it from 32 teams to 32 to 48, and you have from 64 matches to 104, I believe, and you're going to have an extra – sort of stage that's a knockout stage. So it's going to go, you know, 48 to 24 on down the line. And, you know, it's still, you know, 8 groups of 4. It used to be 6 group. No, it's 10 groups of four. Or no, 12 groups of four. 12 groups of four instead of 8. And you got to get out of your group to get to the quote knockout stage. But there's an extra round of that. And it, you know, it's dragged in a few more countries that are more marginal soccer countries. Do soccer fans think this has been a watering down of the product?
I would say soccer fans in Europe, yes.
Okay.
Soccer fans in the rest of the world, no.
That have been desperate to get in.
that have been working to get in. Europe gets the lion's share percentage-wise traditionally. They have the best soccer nations, if you will, but the rest of the world is starting to catch up. And there's a lot of great teams out there. Now, yes, it is watered down, very similar to the NCAA basketball tournament. I mean, you can really think of it that way. There are some teams that have no chance of winning the whole thing.
You've seen Cape Verde has...
Cape Verde, Jordan, Haiti. You know, Haiti hasn't played in their country since 2002. They've had to play all their games mostly in Curaçao and elsewhere because of all the corruption that's been going on in Haiti. And they made the team. And they're just happy to be there.
I did not know Haiti was in the World Cup. Holy
Haiti is in the World Cup.
Shit, that's hilarious. Haiti is in, and Italy, of all countries,
yes,
is not. Can you quickly tell people why Italy missed?
Yeah. So this is Italy's third cup in a row of missing. So it's been over a decade.
How?
Italy in that time has won the European championships. So they are the best team in the best region in the world in that tournament. The problem is the qualifying, just like anything else, has some uniqueness and quirks to it. Just like the World Cup, there are groups you get into, and where you finish in that group, you advance to a knockout stage. And Italy has been in tough groups, had tough knockout stages. And so this last year, in fact, Italy got knocked out by a team that they would beat 8 out of 10 times, Bosnia-Herzegovina, in the playoff. And now Bosnia's in. And Italy's out again, and they're devastated.
Well, that's what's crazy. Like, to me, it's just dumb that they don't have a way to go. Of course, they're a powerful enough nation soccer-wise. They should be in, but they're trying to balance all the different regions of the globe, and you got to have it be a fair way to get in. You can't just say, well, you got to invite Italy. They got to earn their way in. It was like when we got knocked out of the cup by, what was the stupid two-nation team? It was the combination nation that kicked us out in the qualifying couple cycles ago, and Taylor Twellman went on his rant.
Oh, right.
I forget who that was.
I'm drawing a blank on the...
It's happened to us before, so it happened to Italy. Okay, that said... Here we go. And of course, they've gone away from the one country hosting. They've got us, Canada, and Mexico hosting. Why did they choose that versus just the U.S.?
Well, I think part of it is they wanted to expand the tournament. So I think that was part of it. I think the other part is they hadn't been over to this part of the world in North America in a while. And, there was a decision there was a decision amongst the countries to put a grouped bid together.
Okay.
So, you know, what's interesting is this year, the tournament is spread out amongst three countries in 16 locations.
Correct.
And there's a ton of travel. 4 years ago, it was in Qatar. There were all the stadiums were within 20 miles of each other.
Yeah.
So every match was, you know, you stayed in one hotel and you went to the match, you know, it was the expansion and to try something new. And it all boils down to money, Zabe. I mean, FIFA is looking to find ways to increase revenue and to increase eyeballs. And marketing opportunities, and this was another way to try something new.
Yeah. All right. Well, I know that there's also big travel between the teams and their headquarters where they're practicing and working out and training, and then to the stadiums they're going to. So I saw a map of just how far they're going to travel. And, you know, the European mind cannot comprehend the fact that the United States is huge and that you can fit several Europes inside of it. So, you know, that's going to be fascinating. The heat is going to be fascinating. I understand that some of the European players are already like saying, holy shit, Florida is an absolute killer this time of year. Yeah, no shit. Welcome to America. So that's going to be fun. Who are the top three or four favorite teams, even though we're really early in this? Are they the obvious suspects? Is there any sleepers in there?
I would say that two top teams are by far are Spain and France.
Okay.
France's won in 2018, were runners-up to Argentina in 2022. Spain won the European Championships last. They have an 18-year-old phenom named Lamine Yamal. And he'll be a name if people haven't heard him. If you kind of pay attention to this World Cup, you're going to hear his name.
Lamine Yamal.
Yes.
Okay.
Lamine Yamal.
Yamal. All right.
Okay. Lamine Yamal. Yeah, he's right. 18 years old. He plays for Spain. He's unbelievably fast. Some people call him the best player in the world right now. He's just they call him the best youngest player in the world, but they kind of now take the youngest part away. He plays his club soccer at Barcelona, and it's the top club there. So those France and Spain are the top clubs. Argentina are defending champions, still have Messi, so they'll be in the mix. And then you have Portugal, Brazil, and then throw England in there. And really, those are probably your top teams that have the best shot to win.
Okay. Are Messi and Ronaldo still good?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Now, let's put it this way. Messi will start, and he can still impact a game for sure.
All right, so they're still good, but obviously they're kind of in the sunset of their careers.
Yeah, they're definitely on their last ride. There is even question about Cristiano Ronaldo getting a starting position or not with Portugal. He will not play full time. Messi will play a lot.
Okay. Who are the other stars? Mbappe. I know that.
Yeah, so Mbappe plays for France, and he can take over a game. So he's great. Don't forget Harry Kane. I know Americans probably know Harry Kane a little bit more. He's for England. He scored a ton of goals this year for Bayern Munich in the German Bundesliga. And he's going to score a goal.
Be playing in the German league instead of the EPL.
So he played for Tottenham Hotspur.
Okay.
And that was his boyhood club. Okay. And he was there quite a while. And it just kind of started to Tottenham didn't want to pay him what he could get elsewhere. And they threw a ton of money at him when he went to Bayern Munich. And I think he would probably say, this is my opinion, there was just a lot of pressure on the English guy getting a ton of, they wanted him to take pay cuts and all of that. And he's
really?
In Germany and now
like
doing great.
Hometown discount, like help us out kind of thing?
Yeah, but like it was a significant number, and I think he was ready for a change.
Yeah. All right, well, get the most money you can. All right, how about our team, and how about our coach? Tell us about our coach. Who's our guy?
Yeah. So our coach is Mauricio Pochettino. He's an Argentinian.
Okay.
He had a lot of success in Europe coaching. He actually coached Harry Kane at Tottenham Hotspur and took them to the Champions League final. He's got a great pedigree. And in fact, what's interesting is if you look at the South America clubs, aside from Brazil, all the other clubs in the World Cup have an Argentinian coach, which is an interesting stat.
Okay.
So there's a lot of pedigree there. And the U.S. decided they needed to shake things up a little bit and try to get I would call it a winning pedigree, a different look at how to deal with the team and choose players differently and prepare for World Cups differently. You know, he takes a lot of, he's not American. Some people don't like that. He speaks with an accent. Sometimes, people get confused on what he's saying. He's I like him. I think he's going to do a great. I think he's got the team ready. I think he's going to do a great job.
All right. Previously, I'm looking back here at the list. So the last guy was this guy Berhalter.
Yeah,
how was his tenure, Greg Berhalter? Overall, he was American.
He was American.
He is American.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he was American, and he was good, and he was there for, I want to say...
2018 to 2024, so that...
Yeah, about 6 to 8 years, somewhere in there.
There's some guys that were coach of the national team in between, but they never did the World Cup, because I remember the previous guy World Cup was Bruce Arena. How was he viewed? How was he viewed, Bruce Arena?
Oh, he was viewed as, people probably view him still as the best American coach that.
Oh, really? Okay.
The US men's national team. Yeah, he was great.
Before that, we had Jurgen Klinsmann, a guy I remember, the great German Jurgen Klinsmann as coach.
Yeah. And Jurgen was a German who also had a great pedigree as a player. You know, Jurgen was brought in, not only the coach, the team, but he was given the charge to change the structure of soccer in the U.S. And that's been pretty controversial. So when you think of the different clubs and the soccer culture and the youth programs these days, he changed the age date from, you know, the age you are eligible to play for a U18, a U17, a U16 team.
Right.
And they've actually kind of gone away from some of that again. And so it's been, Jurgen was controversial.
Okay. All right. How is our team and who are our stars?
So our team is, you know, I think they're going to be pretty good. They're ranked 14th in the world. Some people think that's too high. Some people think that's too low.
What's that?
So FIFA has a ranking system based on data and coefficients on how you perform against other teams. So whether you're playing in a tournament, like there are different regional tournaments over the years, like in Europe, every 4 years is the World Cup, but every 2 years opposite the World Cup is the UEFA Championships. In the U.S., they call it the CONCACAF Championships or the Gold Cup. And so when you play other national teams, all the teams are rated, and depending on how you perform and where you finish and what you win, that's where the ratings come from.
All right,
and
but so, CONCACAF is not UEFA, like not even close.
No, UEFA. So there are basically five regions around the world. There's Europe, which is UEFA. There's Africa, there's Asia, there's CONCACAF, which is North and Central America, and there's CONMEBOL, which is South America. It's basically the names of the countries down there. So you got those regions, and the way you qualify as a nation is that you play different tournaments throughout the year. But when qualifying for the World Cup, those teams in region are the ones you're competing against to get here.
All right. So who are our stars?
Christian Pulisic is the most well-known star. He is a winger, a forward. He's a goal scorer. He plays for AC Milan in Italy. He has his own TV show where they've been following him around the last 2 years that you can watch out on Paramount Plus. Pulisic.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty good. I mean,
it's a reality show about his life playing in
it's a documentary.
In the
Serie documentary,
right?
Yeah. What's that?
Serie A.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And it's a really good league, along with the Bundesliga, along with the EPL, one of the top leagues over there. And we've rarely had truly American-born players good enough to go play for one of the top clubs in the top leagues over there. So he's one of those guys, finally, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we've got, we've got a good, solid European contingent of players. So there's a guy named, they call him Jedi, but he's Anthony Robinson. He plays over in the English Premier League. And he's going to, I mean, he's, people love his energy. And I don't know if people saw the U.S. national team. They've basically got nine guys that are pretty much consensus starters. And then they've got two guys that there's a lot of debate as to whether those guys should or should not be starting. Most of those guys, it's on the defensive end. And I will say what's interesting for the U.S. men's national team is there's always been a big debate on how do you compare the quality of the players playing in Europe. So the U.S. has several guys playing in Europe. Versus how about the guys who play in, let's say, MLS, who are playing in the United States? The competition is nowhere near as good. And so when I rattle off Anthony Robinson, he plays for Fulham in Europe. Tyler Adams, you'll hear a lot about him. He plays for Bournemouth in the EPL. Chris Richards plays defense. He plays for Crystal Palace in the EPL. Those guys tend to get the nod because they're just playing against great competition every day. One guy I think you might be a breakout guy for the U.S. is Florian Balogun. Young guy. He plays a lot of times the same position as Pulisic or another forward. And there's questions as to how they're going to play Balogun alongside Pulisic, but he could be a guy that gets a lot of attention. He currently plays for Monaco. And then the last guy I would say is Weston McKennie, you're going to hear a lot about. He's a midfielder. He plays for Juventus, which is out of Italy, Serie A, in, which I learned in a difficult way in Turin. So there's going to be some guys that bring a lot of energy.
Did I see that NFL wide receiver Antonio Freeman's son is on the team?
Yep.
Does he
play? Is on the team. He is on the team and he's going to play. His name is his last name is Freeman. Zabe.
Okay. There's a kid who grew up in the cradle of American tackle football and decided to lean into and excel at the world's game of football, and he's on our national team. So that is nice right there. Alex Freeman, okay.
It's so. Alex Freeman, and when the U.S. played Germany this last weekend as their last tune-up in Chicago, Antonio Freeman was doing interviews in Chicago and was – he made some comment, and I don't quote, but to the tune of, I just hope I can get in and out of this place as a Packer Hall of Famer without getting beaten up at Soldier Field. So I know he was joking around about it, but it was so he's been riding the interview train for a while.
All right. What is a good result for the USA? This is our exit question for this visit. We're going to have multiple visits with you throughout the tournament. I just know that last time in the round of 16, when we ran up against the Netherlands, 3-1 was the final score. It felt like 9-0, basically. It felt humiliating to me. I'm like, Jesus, these guys are so fucking good.
Yeah. Yeah. We got ran off the field in the second half there. You know, I think the team has a really good shot to make the quarterfinals. That would be brilliant. That would be a great tournament for them.
Quarterfinals is the final eight. They made
final
the
eight.
16 last time. Of course, the tournament's expanded, but the final eight would be another step. You know, we're going to live long enough, Nick, to see the USA win the World Cup, but it's going to be a long, agonizing march through all the orange slices and participation trophies in this country and the overprivileged luxury soccer camps that our kids participate in. Someday we're going to get there. Let's take that next step this time. How about that?
All for it. All for it, Tate.
We'll talk again soon. Thank you, Nick. It's called
Thanks, the Clean Sheet EPL.
The Clean Sheet EPL. It's a newsletter. Yes, you can read. It's good writing. And we'll talk to Nick again down the road.
Cheers.
All right, let's end on this. Tom Brady, because he has not enough money, has decided to come out with a new health drink, sports drink. I'm not even sure what it is, but it's coconut water in a can. Ugh. Coconut flavored water in a can. And the name of it is Good Nut. And the marketing around it is, do you want to drink Tom Brady's delicious juice? Or I'm trying to get the right wording here. It sounds a little bit, you know what it sounds like. I won't say it. And look, he's probably going to make money with it. I don't know how complicated, tricky the soft drink or beverage game is. But Good Nut, do you want to drink Tom Brady's delicious nut? No. No, I do not, as a matter of fact. And I'm sure it's priced absolutely ridiculously. That's a wrap for me tonight. Thank you so much for listening and for being a loyal Zabecast listener. All feedback, of course, welcome at zabe@yahoo.com. They all come to me directly. I do read them all. I respond to just about every one that I can. I feel it's rude not to. And I appreciate your feedback, good, bad, negative, whatever. It's all good feedback. I take it in. I understand that not everybody emails me. So I can't just take two or three people with one opinion on something and say, well, that's it. That settles it. Because there are plenty more of you that don't have the time or don't care to write me. And that's good. You honestly shouldn't. You should be out doing something fun in nature, getting some vitamin D. I don't know. You don't need to be emailing podcasters. But I'll take them all at zabe@yahoo.com. As always, you can subscribe and get this podcast ad-free by going to zabe.com/premium. Finding out it's only $5 a month? That's it? It's never been raised in the 8 years you've been doing the podcast? That's right. And I get the OG, Scott and Solly, on Fridays when other guys do not. I'm in. Zabe.com/premium. I appreciate your support. Have yourself a crackerjack Tuesday, everybody. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next time. This night, this crowd, come on, put them up, let me hear it loud. This town, this city, this crowd, stand up on your feet, put your worry down. And every one of you all around, come on, y'all, let's take it. Every one of you in this crowd, come on, y'all, let's take this town. The playoffs are here, people. NBA and NHL, both going at the same time. That's the best 2 weeks in the sports calendar, right? And it goes fast. More games, more angles, more ways to be right, and more ways to win. That's the fun. MyBookie.ag has it all. And right now, for new players, use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. And if your first bet doesn't hit, they refund it up to $500 back as free play one-time rollover, plus $25 in casino credit automatically. That's called insurance, my friends. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.